Hi, everybody, and welcome to our 37th Dissipation of Glamour initiative. We'll be continuing a little bit with the technique of the presence. In a way, it is the very first thing that we should be dealing with, but since it's in a way rather abstruse, I thought we would get going on the technique of light first, since that is where our meditation necessarily has to be focused. I'd like to welcome Alexis, Anne, Anne Marie, Annette, Antoinette, Ario, Carl, Clesia, Deborah, Denise, Eha, Francois, and GP. So sorry, I'm not. Anyway, welcome GP. Jan, Jean, Joan, Karen, Launa, Lorraine, Margot, Marianne, Martha, Michael, Risto, Sheldon, Stephanie, I guess it is, Suzanne, Yvonne, and Zach. And we have standing by here on staff, BL, Joe, and Brett, will help us if we get into any trouble. Now, just to review the five revelations which we talked about the last time, were the cause of all human suffering is desire and personal selfishness. Give up desire and you will be free. These are the essence of the Four Noble Truths given by the Buddha. There is a way of liberation and it leads to illumination. So this saves us from a somewhat fatuous heaven on the astral plane and leads into the planes which are truly planes of liberation, the cosmic ethers for us on the cosmic physical plane. Number three, it profits a man nothing to gain the whole world and lose his soul. The development of consciousness is the major task that we have, and it is materialism or the belief in the reality of our normal sensory perceptions which hold us down. Those perceptions are not real, and there's a whole world substanding what we ordinarily consider to be the real in the three lower worlds. Every human being is a son of God. So this is all souls are one with the Oversoul. It's the third fundamental of the secret doctrine. And there is a way of liberation, and it is the way of love and sacrifice. This is, of course, what the Christ taught particularly. So we're going to move on here. We will either have we will either finish this particular section this time or the next. And I just want to say that tomorrow morning we will have a continuation of our academic work in the science of triangles. You know, there is that amazing section in esoteric astrology where about 100 pages or so are given to the understanding and development of the science of triangles. Now, every Wednesday, of course, we have our triangles meditation. It's a broadcast. But every so often, just about every 2 weeks or so, there'll be a break for the conference, of course. We will have our academic webinar, and the link for this webinar is here in your chat box. So, you know, hopefully you can copy that, and here it is as well, but I'm not expecting you to copy all those numbers, maybe just in case for any reason you don't have that available. I will put it in there again. I think it's there. Okay, so let's have just a little alignment before we begin our work here on Dissipation of Glamour. We've been working on the dissipation of the glamour of egotism born out of the illusion of egoism, which is, of course, the great mistake in self-perception, which the Vedanta and the Upanishads and Buddhism all have attacked as confining a human being to an illusory, glamorous world. So if we could eliminate the glamour of egotism, whether it's, rule out the good self and the bad self, and let only Christ be seen and heard. One of the group members pointed out, well, you know, if you have a lot of negative attention on your personality, it's just as bad as inflating the value of your personality, because it basically stands in the middle of your field of perception. And because of that, it takes up too much space and you cannot see things in right proportion. Proportion is so important in eradicating glamour. A glamour is based upon exaggeration or minimization and the inability to see things in true relationship, true size to proportion. If we can end that, we will know the true value of everything within our field of consciousness, and we will not inflate or deflate our little ego, which is so often the case, you know, all the way from I'm the greatest to poor me. You know, it runs the whole gamut, and oftentimes the two are found together, and the people who inflate their own lower ego and seem to present it as the most important factor in the world are really suffering from an inferiority complex and do not have that judicious kind of understanding that takes place in the middle, on the middle, on the noble middle path. Anyway, let's link with each other. I always welcome everybody in the beginning. So if you join a little bit late, I just say a general welcome to you all. But I won't be calling the names again. Okay. So, we are linked with each other as those who are becoming soul-infused personalities, and we will be that in its entirety by the time we are ready to take the fourth initiation. 75% soul infusion by the time of the third degree, and 100% by the time the fourth degree is to be taken. So we're on our way, and we're not there yet. But we have enough soul energy, which is the energy of love and light and sacrificial will, to come together to do a piece of work, offer ourselves for a kind of service that will be useful to humanity and to the hierarchy. And we feel the energy which draws us all together, not so much as personalities, but as souls in incarnation, who are on their way to being able to focus on the plane of soul, as if their soul were the main focus of identity, at least temporarily, until the monad becomes that. So the main thing is that we are in cooperation with especially the ashram of Master DK, and then working especially with the second ray and the fifth ray, and to some extent the sixth ray, and in alignment with the hierarchy, which we realize to be the heart center of Sanat Kumara. And finally, you know, all of this is impulsed from that great center of unfettered enlightenment, which is Shambhala. Not that we can walk in the front door of Shambhala, you know, there are even masters that cannot do that. But we can be increasingly receptive to and responsive to as much of the divine will and the divine purpose as can come through our soul nature and be transmitted to our center of consciousness within the three lower worlds. And so we'll sound the Om together and close this little alignment, affirming our solidarity in this work. Thank you. And if we can keep up our, you know, steady pressure just about every week, or occasionally having to miss a week, but if we can continue in this way, we will be adding a significant energy toward the correction of illusions and glamours, and then inevitably various forms of Maya. Now, we're continuing here. This is on page 186. So, you know, if things cross your mind, either from our reading or from, you know, your own thought on glamour and illusion as you've undertaken that thought during the week, then make note of it, and then, you know, you can offer your thoughts or questions during our period of questions and answers and statements. Much of the revelation of the past has come along the lines of the religious impulse. Now, DK said, you know, it's one of the great victories of the Black Lodge that humanity has come to think of religion and spirituality as equivalent. Spirituality is a much bigger thing, and the strictly sixth ray presentation certainly is not that which contains all paths to truth and all paths to the hierarchy. So we have to widen that perception. We know how many people are still the victim of it. And as illusion has deepened and grown in time, the original simplicity, as it was conveyed by its revealers, especially for us, the Christ and the Buddha, has been lost. Master Moria said, you know, well, which would you choose to do? Would you choose to complicate or to simplify? And basically he said, always simplify. Simplicity governs the way into Shambhala. The Tibetan tells us, esoteric, it's a discipleship in the New Age, volume 2, page 518. It's a wonderful page in which he's instructing a man who probably has a first-ray monad, but a sixth-ray soul, how to make that alignment with Shambhala. Simplicity governs the way. So the original simplicity of the original revelation has been lost, and we have paid for that. All basic revelations are presented in the simplest forms. Accretion, you know, like barnacles on a ship. Accretion after accretion crept in. The minds of men, especially, let's say, the lower mind, made the teaching complex through their mental dissertations until the great theological systems were built up. And we had illusion, fragmentation, complication, And these systems, we call them, for instance, the Christian Church and the Buddhist system. And, you know, in case you think that there is more accretion and theological assertion in Christianity than there is in Buddhism, there isn't. The Buddhist system can also be extremely complex. And, you know, there are many people that don't have the mind for that thing, that way of proceeding. And there are many minds who get into it, who lose their sense, their appreciation and understanding of the liberating fundamentals. This doesn't mean we have to be a fundamentalist, you know, and be unintelligent in that way. It just means that the major revelations can never be obscured, and they are, unfortunately, for so many of us. So the great theological systems have been built up, and we owe that a lot to the fifth ray. In combination with the sixth ray, it produces theology. Their founders, the Christ and the Buddha in this case, would have much difficulty in recognizing the two or three fundamental and divine facts or truths which they sought to reveal and emphasize. So great is the mantle of illusion, you know, that great heavy cloak which weighs things down. The mantle of illusion, misinterpretation, inadequate interpretation created by the concrete mind. This mantle of illusion which has been thrown over the simple pronouncements of the Christ and the Buddha. And basically we just read those simple pronouncements in those five statements which were just found in the previous program, you know, the low desire, the way to light, improving consciousness and not losing your soul in materialism. We're all sons and daughters of God. We're all, you know, we're all part of the one oversoul. And love and sacrifice out of the way. I mean, these are some of the major statements by these great revealers. And the mantle of illusion, you know, that we love our own thoughts so much, it's a problem of the fifth ray, and especially of the third ray, it helps to create theology, that we forget the essence of things. The vast cathedrals, the pompous ceremonies of the Orthodox are far removed from the humble way of life of the Christ, the master of all the masters and the teacher alike of angels and of men. And from that statement, of course, we had better listen to him, had we not? And from the simplicity of his present way of life as he watches and waits for the return of his people to the simple way of spiritual realization. And interestingly enough, D.K. tells us that the way of simplicity, which I suppose is equivalent to the way of sharing, is going to be actually forced upon humanity. The Saturn rulership of the first decanate of Aquarius will bring difficulty, he says, during the first 720 years. Maybe we don't count that as such a long time, but from the time the Aquarian age begins, it's not going to be just all, you know, harmony and love and understanding. We may have to wait till the Venus decanate of Aquarius, the last 720 years, before those fruits of our labors in Aquarius really come home to humanity as a whole. So great has been the illusion. You know, of course, this is perceived from the point of view of a master, and obviously it's a bit horrifying because they can see so much more of what was meant to be and compare it with what we've made of it all, you know. So great has been the illusion that in the West today, men talk of the temporal power of the Catholic Church. Well, look, the rays of the Catholic Church are the first ray soul, third ray personality, the sixth ray mind, very rare. The Buddha has one, but very rare. The sixth ray astral body and the seventh ray ritualistic etheric physical body. So we can see that with that third ray personality of the Catholic Church, it can easily fall into, the world. Well, there's the world, the flesh, and the devil, but the world is the third ray aspect of it, the flesh, the second ray, and the devil, the first ray. So we do know that there's all kinds of financial manipulation that has been going on. Now, maybe the present Pope, and it was promised that the Master Jesus would finally and really be overshadowing one of these popes, maybe as early as 1980, but that didn't work out. But maybe the present Pope will be overshadowed in such a way that there will be attack upon this materialism. So the temporal power of the Catholic Church, well, it's not meant to be that, but it is that. The Protestant churches are split up into warring factions. You know, it began with protest, which was good in a way, but there are hundreds of sects, 300, 400 sects, which emphasize mostly a misinterpretation, a hanging on to one little part of the entirety and emphasizing it as if that's the main thing, you know. When you're baptized, are you totally submerged or are you only partially submerged, you know? And there's all kinds of things that the limited mind of the human being fasten onto because they dislike the need to think and they want something really simple in the negative sense, which denies a full understanding. Anyway, all of these sects exist. The Christian Science Church, which he said really came in on the sixth ray and the fifth ray together and had some value, of course, but it is known for its ability to amass money and to teach its adherents to do so and to achieve temporary good health, maybe through affirmations and that kind of thing. I mean, there are truths there, but the emphasis of the benighted followers, unfortunately, is on the material aspect. And, you know, when you look at John Calvin and his influence on Christianity, if you were wealthy, it proved that God loved you, okay? Now, interesting, Calvin had a very strong retentive Cancerian energy, and his moon, I think, was in Taurus, the acquisitiveness of it. And, you know, he emphasized that God loves the rich. Well, you know, everything's on its head, everything's turned upside down, which does not mean that we do not know the value of money and what it can do in a spiritual sense, as D.K. promotes in his meditation on accumulating money and spreading it for spiritual purposes. And you can do that with us every Sunday if you're interested. Okay, so temporary good health, the Greek Orthodox Church, he's being analytical here. He's just calling it as he sees it, you know. The Greek Orthodox Church was corrupt throughout. And only the simple faith of the uncultured and the poor has preserved any semblance of the truth in its original form. So, you know, simplicity, it's much, as long as it's not simple-mindedness. There's a difference between simplicity and simple-mindedness. Simplicity sees the essence of things and emphasizes the few essences. Simple-mindedness simply is superficial. The poor, the uncultured, the uneducated in the concrete-minded sense, he says, they have no ability for high-sounding theological discussions. Maybe they're not too valuable, they just sound good. But they do believe that God is love, just simply that, that there is a way which leads to peace and light, and that if they deny their own material desires, they are pleasing God. Well, okay, you know, it sounds like a simple path, but there are so many more sophisticated people that do not follow that path and end up with all kinds of materialistic complication of the mind and all kinds of illusory misunderstanding. I am, I know, he says, widely generalizing, brother of mine, for I do know also that there are wise and good Christians and churchmen within the theological systems. And, he says that Master Jesus has certain students who are high in the church and with whom he meets. I guess they're not saying too much about it, but they are in his ashram, and even though they're within the large church, so to speak, they have that ability to see through all the materialism and to really know what a master is and who Jesus really is. These high, good Christians and churchmen, they do not spend their time in theological discussions, but in loving their fellow men. Maybe Pope John the 23rd, maybe he was an example of that, a simple human being who had a great love of his fellow human beings. And, and the present Pope, I think, has a lot of that as well, so it seems. Where are we? Okay, and this they do because they love Christ and all for which he stands. They are not interested in great church, building great churches of stone and marble and in gathering together the money needed for their support. That was the great fear, that after the destruction, beneficent destruction of the Second World War, the broom of God sweeping many things clean, that we would just go back to building the old edifices just the way they were before, reconstructing the old world. That was a serious concern, and the Tibetan talks about it. But these people who are on the right track, and they are Christians and in the church, they're interested to gather out those who form the true church upon the inner spiritual plane and in helping them to walk in the light. Well, that's the real church triumphant, the real church on the inner side, the real assembly of the saints, and the saints are the initiates. It's all true in a sense if one understands esotericism, and that's where we have to make our bridges to help shatter these illusions and or at least apply intuitive unity to the world of illusion and apply deglamorization to the world of exaggeration and minimization, which is the world of glamour. All out of proportion, all out of proportion. So let's see a little more here. The illusion of power, the illusion of superiority taints them not. But whenever you have the lower ego, which is centered in the concrete mind for the most part, you're going to have these issues of power and superiority. And in a way, this is as much, the world, the flesh, and the devil. This is the devil part of that triplicity, which must be defeated between the second and third initiation. When you go off into the desert, this is all symbolic in a way, but some people might do it literally. Go off into the desert and you undertake your fast for 40 days. I'm sure you'll be seeing a lot of things fasting for 40 days. I know a couple of individuals who have done that and survived. And then, the choice is presented to you. Do you overcome the third ray world, the second ray flesh, the first ray devil? After the world crisis is over, so this was written, a little bit before, well, the world crisis is not over yet, but, maybe he's talking about the world war. Churchmen everywhere will not rest until they can discover how to penetrate through the illusion of doctrine and dogma which engulfs them. It really prevents you from thinking, from applying your soul-infused mind, your intuitive mind, to that which presents itself to you. You just hang on to the doctrine and the dogma, and everything's solved for you. It's designed for people who are not trusted to think and who don't want to think. Okay. But the soul is the thinker. We have to remember that. So how to penetrate through the illusion of doctrine and dogma which engulfs them and find their way back to Christ and his simple message, which has in it the power to save the world if recognized and practiced. Well, I think there were some churchmen then and even now who reverted to the apparently safer way of doctrine and dogma, but there were many who moved on into freer spaces, and there have been many developments in the area of the church, which have been expansive and much more tolerant and understanding. And all of that is on its way to the new world religion. Now, much of the true revelation, this is interesting, since the time of Christ, has come to the world along the line of science. I guess we can think back toward the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th, you know, when radiation, X-rays, the theory of relativity was developed, a tremendous step forward for the fifth ray ashram at that time. The presentation, for instance, now of material substance, scientifically proven, especially, you know, I guess the atom bomb really proved it, as essentially only a form of energy, matter is energy, was as great a revelation as any given by the Christ or the Buddha. Now, excuse me, you're not going to get the average churchman to admit that this might be so, but along a different ray ashram line, the fifth ray, the third ray, and also the first ray behind atomic energy, the dematerialization of matter into energy, and then, of course, later the magical precipitation of energy into matter. That's the other side of the coin, and that's coming with the seventh ray. This really rocked the world and presented us with the kind of dangerous world full of opportunity that we now have. So DK is saying, look, you know, spirituality is more than just the church. It's more than the second ray and the sixth ray. It has everything to do with all of the presentations of all of the ashrams. And this was a huge presentation, so great, in fact, that I think from 1950 until the year 2000 at least, and maybe beyond, the fifth ray ashram in its demand and its inquiring success had to be held back and made subsidiary to the third ray ashram in a larger sense, because it was learning too much too fast given the moral status of humanity. So as great a revelation as given by the Christ or the Buddha, and that's how we have to think about spirituality along many lines and widen our minds so we do not get stuck in the old. I mean, the old can be very beautiful. It's such wonderful music and art, and when you go into those old churches, you know, there is something really, really there, but that's only a part of the picture. And we, as disciples, we have to have a holistic vision, you know, if we can. The macrocosmic whole is all there is, he tells us in the fifth rule, in the rays and initiations, the big picture. And so all of this, it completely revolutionized men's thinking and was, little as you may think it, a major blow struck at the great illusion. Well, you know, matter is no longer real. We just, you know, in the old days, the Greeks used to think that atoms were hard little balls. Well, at least Democritus and those people, they had the notion of an atomic reality. But now we know that the atoms are actually forms of energy and not concrete little things, you know. So we're just, the whole world is dematerializing or etherealizing, if you might look at it that way. And, you know, although we have to handle everything we think we see and everything that we perceive as concrete and real, we're learning how to work from etheric levels, and that's going to bring a whole new relationship with our apparently solid state reality. So it related, all these things happened with the atomic energy. It related energy to force, okay, form to life, because after all, life is the essence itself, and form is essentially an illusion, and man to God, the concrete man to the real energy God. God is energy, DK tells us in various ways and at various times, and held the secret of transformation, that's the astral plane, transmutation, that's the etheric physical plane, transfiguration, that's the mental plane. So this new attitude towards energy combined with occultism and occult tradition, is going to help us change our personality, transmute it, transform it, transfigure it, until it becomes the true ray agent of the soul, a whole new level of reality which we are going to have to discover under the fifth ray, and we're told that France will be the custodian of that secret. The revelations of science, when basic and fundamental, are as divine as those of religion. But both have been prostituted to meet human demand. And I want to say here, you know, based on misidentification. In other words, you know, we think we are what we see. But the very first thing you have to do is, when you see what apparently is the self, you just have to know that it's an aggregation, a congestion of atoms brought together under the impulse of etheric forces and energies, and it's not what it seems. Things are not what they seem. So we misinterpret what we are, and therefore we follow our desires, our lower desires. And there we have our will, such as it is, our personal will, demands the things that desire wants. And that's the condition of humanity at the moment, but we are growing out of it. The era is close at hand when science will bend every effort to heal humanity's sores and build a better and happier world. And he really tells us, you know, it's quite interesting. He tells us that when the fifth ray types, some of whom have been, maybe many, have been imported from Vulcan, and maybe to a certain extent from Mercury, but I think Vulcan is the main source there, finally get the second petal in their egoic lotus to open, you know, and they are filled with more of this love energy, which they did not cultivate on their planet of origin. We are going to see wonders in our world, where the scientific mind will be turned to the loving alleviation of the human predicament, and men will be given the leisure which they need to truly cultivate themselves culturally, artistically, spiritually, psychologically, inwardly. You know, and we don't have that right now. So many people are simply the slaves to outer circumstances. But when that fifth ray group really develops that second petal fully, which, you know, it's sent to Earth to do, then things will change dramatically for us, and the fifth ray will bring in an era of real joy and progress, and we will, as human beings, be liberated into the possibility of cultivating our true nature instead of just being the slave to circumstance. Okay, so, you know, I maybe never make it too far, but this is the end of our academic. Well, you know, that comes from the word academy. And remember, it's not a bad word. Plato had an academy. Aristotle had an academy back in those days. And I suppose in the Neoplatonic days, there were academies as well. And they discussed very interesting things and advanced the cause of philosophy tremendously. So this is the end of our academic discussion, number 37. I don't know how far we got here. Page 188. I guess we started at a certain, where did we start? 186. 186 to 188. Excuse me. Okay, pages 186 to 188, and I think the next time that we meet, which should be in about a week, we will be quite close to finishing this section. I think so. I think I'll aim at that. It's not too long a section, and then, you know, basically, the intention here, you know, three of us started this particular approach, Olivia Hansen, Tuya Robbins, myself, to give some practical work in the dissipation of glamour, since the world is so terribly glamoured at the moment, and is even fighting the issue about whether truth is at all valuable. It's incredible. But anyway, to do the meditations to work subjectively, but at the same time, we want to study this wonderful book, Glamour, A World Problem, and try to clarify our own consciousness, and while we're helping to clarify the consciousness of humanity. So there's many sections in this book which are of great value, and I'll try to continue presenting them in an academic manner so we can be filled in terms of the subject, even as we continue to work as a group on the dissipation of glamour. So this will be then, we'll begin next time this will be our doggy, okay, number 38, Dissipation of Glamour Initiative, and we'll begin at page 188. All right, friends, now, excuse me, if you have thoughts, questions, you know, you can speak out loud if you wish, just raise your hand, or you can give your statement or your question in the question box or the chat box, wherever you go, and Brett will pick it up, and maybe I'll be able to say something about it, or we can at least look at what you've been thinking about. So the floor is open now for you to offer your thoughts. And by the way, you know, let me just say, I surely do want to invite all of you to come to the University of the Seven Rays, Seven Ray Institute conference in Chandler, Arizona, starting on May the 2nd. That will be the pre-conference beginning. And about a week later, on May the 9th, we'll have the actual full conference. We do so much at the pre-conference along the line of ceremonial arts and the study of esoteric astrology and the study of the seven rays. This time we're going to do the rays and their relation to the Antikorana. So that's really deep academic work, but also practical for yourself. And then we have our very rich offering during the conference per se, the full conference, the main conference. So just because Arizona may seem a long way away, don't let it stop you. And if you cannot come by airplane or train or car or whatever, then, you know, we'll also be doing our best to offer streaming of many of the activities. Of course, there's nothing like being there. We'll have a new venue. I think it's very beautiful. And right next to Old Town Chandler, lots of wonderful restaurants and shopping opportunities to speak of life in the three worlds, which we still have to live in. But at least join us for our broadcasts and our streams of the conference. But we'd love to see you there in person. I think it's a very uplifting opportunity. And now I've stalled long enough for you to have some questions or statements, and I'm looking for either your hand or your question marks or whatever. Anything you would like to say, and don't be shy, you know, any question, any thought can be revelatory. Don't worry about, you know, well, I mean, you know, if I was worried about what I said compared to what Master DK said, I keep my mouth shut all the time. Maybe that'd be better anyway. I don't know. But I just wouldn't say a thing. But I'm not worried about it, because we learn how to think together, be together, explore new light together by taking the risk of saying what we think. So by all means, be brave.
Michael?
Yes, Brett.
Julia has her hand up.
Okay, and Helena too, right? Okay, so here is Tuya and here is Helena. So go ahead, Tuya, and then I'll get to Helena. Go ahead, Tuya.
Yes, hello to everybody. So it just came to my mind when reading about this substance and about the matter and this whole mystery of matter and its purpose. My mind was going to the meditation, the money meditation, and how much it has been teaching me how so wisely DK has been putting that money meditation, even though it's may sound very simple, and it is simple, but it is very, very deep to go into the substance of what money is, that it is that golden substance which is flowing or coming from the sun itself. And when we go to that way into the clamors that we have around money in the world, the whole world present time is like run by the thought that do we have money enough? Well, no, we don't have money for that. We cannot do that because we don't have money. Money is used for selfish ways that basically behind it is all the time the fear that I will lose it, I don't have it enough. But when we go to that substance, the golden substance, what money basically is, and we realize that there is so much and it's so plenty, it would be enough to switch our thought to, even though it is concretized, but go behind it. Whatever is our money situation, we may have a little bit so in the standard that we say in human way. But when we go to that substance, what is behind, we have it plenty all the time. That how much that is opening our hearts to really, because in this meditation, DK points out that we will love, that we will feel the love which is behind all things. So he relates love and money together, and that is something what I think is worth for all of us to really meditate, that how much do we love and how much do we then have money, and if we don't have money, we don't have to think that we don't love enough. But maybe it is we should think about. But every now and then we have these karmic moments when we don't have money a lot. But how that the new way of putting that forward and new way how we are gaining so-called more money is that just that we should start to love more and give this principle of sun to come into our life and in that sense bring the life and kill the clamors around money.
That's very important. I think we're going to have to do some work on the glamour of materialism. That, of course, it's a huge, huge glamour. And DK says, in terms of attracting money, love is a huge ingredient, as well as the courage to ask, In other words, the formula is use, demand, take. So, you use what you've got, then you demand more because you're doing it for the right reason, and then you take it and use it again. So that will be some future work that we'll be doing. Thank you, Tuya, for enlarging on that. Look, all these meditations are completely interactive and interrelated. When we're speaking about triangles, reappearance of the Christ, the work on glamour, the work on the soul of nations, the work on attracting money, they're absolutely interactive and interrelated. So, improvement in one will bring improvement in others. Thank you, Tuya. And let's see, I'll go here to Alina. Then I see Stephanie. Looks like she has a question or a statement. So go ahead, Alina.
Yes, okay, good. Well, I just want to say a quick word on what Tuya said and just build on that and affirm it. I've been recently reading some books on little books that have come out in the popular kind of press about money. And both of the little ones that I've just found are exactly that, just what you're saying, Tuya, that in fact one of them says to love money. Because money is actually just this pure, beautiful, golden substance, and that we have to love money, not hate it, not say that it's dirty or all of these old thought forms around money because it was misunderstood. So from the disciplic perspective to love money and the energy of money in just the ways you were describing. So I totally agree with you there. Well, so my comment question, actually, Michael, given that this section is so much about the churches and the glamour of the churches and how the message has been distorted over time, and how we're moving into that time period when we are looking for what is the new world religion. Mm-hmm. I just would love for you to say a few things, what comes to your mind about what is the new world religion, what is the main, what is its presentation?
Well, it's of course, he's written so much on that, but it's an amazingly scientific and magical religion, meaning that the fifth ray and the seventh ray and the planet Uranus will be combined here. So it will be a religion of invocation, a scientific invocation of the higher energies using the fifth ray knowledge and seventh ray knowledge of cycles. It will be, it will not be so much a personal religion as a religion of the larger picture and the energies involved in the larger context. It will absolutely use the astrological and ray energies and right timing. And it will use the fifth ray to approach the mastery of the energies which are precipitating rather than, sort of hope, pray, wish, and maybe they will come. There will be scientific invocation at selected times and scientific magical precipitation of the energies which are followed, and thus the reordering of the world according to spiritual principles. Now, of course, fundamentally the energy of love, which the Christ will present, in much greater measure than we've had, will be indispensable in this new world religion. But all I can say, and I guess we all know it, is if we read the reappearance of the Christ, and reread it and reread it, as some of us try to do, we will get an example of this universal world religion, which will not be sectarian, will not be all divided up, and will be basically humanistic in the sense of promoting the soul. So, the wars in the religious field will end. And in place of that will be the access, invocatory access to something which will scientifically and magically uplift everybody. That, off the top of my head, that's the kind of thing that I can say. And the hierarchy among us will promote that. And the new world religion will not be religious, if I can say it that way. It will be spiritual. And already groups like AA and the 12-step programs and all that, they make a big differentiation between religion and spirituality. It will be spiritual, it will be representing all the ashrams, and it will not be dogmatic and concrete-minded. It will be based upon the building of the Antikorana in the educational systems. But, Reappearance of the Christ is the book to read, and basically get out your Alice Bailey CD-ROM and just put New World Religion or religion and just make the compilation, look at it, and he has everything to say about it. So that's what I could say off the top of my head, Helena, from my perspective.
Yes, that's great. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well,
that was great for all of us.
Perfection is a long way away, but what the heck, We all have our ideas about what it's going to be, and we're all working towards that. And remember that Masonry, the New World Religion, and the banded esoteric organisms will all, each one of them, present their candidates for initiation in the coming years. So it's also the doorway to initiation. Okay, thank you, Helena. Let's see now. Stephanie, is it? Yes, for a while now, doing these webinar meditations, I get to a huge metal wall that is shut. Very ornate. Well, we all have our own individual psyche, and so what it means to you and what it means to anybody else is going to be a unique thing. I wonder about that, and would you please share your thoughts? It doesn't stop me from doing the meditations. Well, look, I guess we all have those issues. We hear about the great defending wall, that hierarchy, like, what does he call it? DK says, like unshatterable steel, which hierarchy puts down to protect the workers for the reappearance and other hierarchical project. Master Moria says, later you will see how we protected you. You know, obviously we don't know what that's about. But sometimes there are images that are unique to us, and we really have to enter into dialogue with them, you know, as if they had a voice, the psychological technique, you know, why are you here? What are you trying to show me? How can I see beyond you or go beyond you? See, there's always a door of initiation, and that door will hold us out unless we have the same kind of vibration as that which lies on the further side of the door. So what I would suggest, Stephanie, is having a dialogue with your wall. You know, once I had a door that just wouldn't open, you know. One part of it opened and the other part just wouldn't open. Every time I imagined it open, it slammed shut, you know. So I had to enter into dialogue with it and look deeper as to why that image representing a certain energy was there. And, you know, obviously it's going to be different for you and for everybody. Now, of course, you can also think of it as the great defending wall, which means that, in fact, you're on one side of it and it holds back many negative forces which are eager to destroy humanity. But, you know, this is a psychological task for you, Stephanie. You have to enter into the questioning process when you're in meditation. You have your tablet or your computer or your pen handy and dialogue with this image. You can always dialogue with an image. That's part of the psychosynthesis technique that Roberto Assagioli gave to us. And it's amazing how these images will speak, and you just listen to them. Don't judge anything. Just keep the questioning going. Maybe some understanding will appear. Okay. Right, right. Very good. Okay. Terrific. I'm glad that it's familiar with you. Then work on it and see how it goes. You know, we all have to manage our own psyche. This is what it boils down to. And Assagioli was really teaching us how to do that so we could make that transition from psyche, what we normally call the psyche, into the spiritual, psycho-spiritual work. You know what it's all about. Okay, thank you. Of course, it's ornate. It sounds pretty good, too. So find out why it's so ornate. Okay. All right. Other questions, thoughts?
Okay. Michael has his hand up.
Michael, yep, I see Michael's hand there. And go ahead, Michael.
Hello, Michael. Hello, everyone. Just wanted to talk briefly about, in 1905, the Newtonian paradigm of the world as we understood it was upended with Einstein's special theory of relativity. In that theory, he equated, he mathematically and scientifically acknowledged Blavatsky's spirit and matter equivalency, E equals MC squared. And I wonder to what extent we, as disciples and aspirants, as well as those in the outer world, are still living under that Newtonian paradigm, seeing everything as solid, whereas, you know, it's just energy.
Yeah, a lot, Michael. What did Einstein say about common sense? He had kind of a dim view of it, you know, and he said, I'm going to misquote this, but, you know, the idea is there that it's the series of accumulated prejudices that a person has until they reach the age of X, whatever it was. So he just says these are accumulated prejudgments based upon sensory input, but they are not real because the fifth ray, you know, penetrates through into the reality. And many of us are still living in that kind of world. a very literal God in heaven with a white beard and all the rest of it, a very literal material heaven and all the rest. There was a book by a Tibetan, was his name Trungpa or something, Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism. I don't think I read the book, but I certainly did like the title. And there's still a lot of spiritual materialism. And somehow we scientifically, esoterically, occultly have to soften up these prejudices so people are open to new possibilities. This is the problem with fundamentalism right now. It's very literally minded. Yeah, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
It's to me, each of us are like living in two worlds. We're living in the Newtonian world, and we're living in the new world that Einstein identified is what is reality. And to what extent, certain percentage in the Einsteinian world and a huge percentage in the Newtonian world. Yeah. Still continuing to see with the blinders on.
Yeah. Well, he said, look, DK wrote some shocking things about the release of the atomic bomb. And many people look at it and they just really can't stand what he said. But he talked about the blow against materialism that represented. Now, of course, it takes a long time sometimes for those kinds of hierarchical thoughts to enter the human mind. So basically, he tells us materialism is dead. It just hasn't fallen apart yet. And I think that as we get more and more into the Aquarian age, we're going to find that air sign energy, ruled most essentially by the planet Uranus, is going to do a lot to etherealize our perceptions, and also the discovery of the etheric body, as is now being done. The concrete physical world is going to start looking less and less absolutely real. But, patience is required, and our own ministrations to the people that we can help and influence.
And the best thing that we can do is work with ourselves and with our groups to gain that experience, because that experience is the best teacher.
Yes, absolutely true. And of course, there are rules to follow and things that we cannot do that render our perception more crude. We have to refine our perception until other worlds begin to appear as realities to us. Then we'll be able to help others do the same. Okay, well, we're on our way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anything else, friends, before our meditation? Excuse me.
Yes.
Who do we have?
I have a question for Suzanne.
Okay. Goodness, I'm. You know, you. This may be one of those moments that you're going to read this. Or is it, Brett? Just read it to me because I've lost my way. I can't get back to the.
Didn't Einstein also give a definition of insanity as doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results?
Yeah, he did.
Perhaps we can apply this idea in our spiritual efforts as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we want to change some mode of perception or behavior, something about our inner or outer life, if we keep on doing the same thing, it's not going to change. Okay, so unless the same thing is the right thing. But if the thing we were doing produced one set of results, we can't continue with that thing. We have to have a new thing, which we have the patience to repeat constantly. Look, I'll tell you what, we're just at the beginning of all this. If you really stop to think of what a human being is, as great as the human being is over, let us say, the other kingdoms of nature, we're just little specks, and even our little planet is a little speck. And Master Moria tells us to wear away irritation through cosmic perception. Interesting, really interesting, because there's just so many things which set our consciousness ill at ease and cause a kind of fire by friction in our consciousness, which is not desirable. But cosmic perception will wear away that kind of friction. So we expand our minds, expand our understanding, and gradually the other worlds begin to emerge for us, and we become sensitive. As DK says, keep silence and the light will enter in. I've pondered on that a long time, especially in my more noisy moments. Okay, thank you, Suzanne. Okay, anything further? Okay, let's see, what am I doing here? Okay, Suzanne and Stephanie, yeah, okay, good. Well, okay. So look, let's continue with our work. The academic is part of it, of course, and our work for the dissipation of glamour is our practical and effective work. I'll try to make this a little bigger. I end up having so many different versions of the same thing that, yeah, I sometimes get lost here. But we will now do our work together in meditation. And remember, it's the glamour of egotism. It's, it's, everybody is subject to it, but maybe the first ray types, if you have prominent first ray somewhere, it can affect you. Well, you know, all the rays, the mental pride of the third ray and the sort of self-centered drama of the fourth ray and the belief that you know it all of the fifth ray, and that that only your particular belief is correct of the sixth ray, and that you know how to do everything better than anyone else, which is the seventh ray. All of these things feed this glamour of egotism. And let's see, I'm trying to see, there we go. Maybe that will help. Okay. All right. Make it a little bit bigger, and we'll start. Okay, friends, so let's just have some silence among ourselves as we sense the reality of the group and we become sensitive in the silence. Yes, and we can definitely feel the presence of the group working together. And we will do our protective formula, never forgetting that in this kind of work, we do need protection. Remember that the counterforce will always try to attack your psyche first. If they can throw the glamour over you, they prefer that to attacking the physical body. It's only when they can't render glamorous the psyche that they will go for the dense physical. So the protective formula, accompanied by the sign of the cross, which, as we know, is from the forehead to the chest, to the left eye, to the right eye. As a soul, I work in light. And darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. This light is a real thing. It's tangible. It is matter, actually. In preparation for our work on the astral plane, we focus the dual light of matter and mind. The vitality of the etheric body, especially, and the ability to think on the concrete levels of mind. We draw up the vitality into the concrete mind. And there, those two lights are focused. And we then meditate on soul contact, and we do our best to recognize soul light. It's like contacting the angel of the presence in the egoic lotus, that energy. And then we bring the soul light down, as it were, onto the plane of concrete mind, and we merge it with the energy of mind and the energy of matter, which is essential vitality. We merge the three in the imagination. So our thinking is vitalized by the vitality of matter and by the energy of the soul, the light of the soul. We have the mind held steady in the light. Three lights merge. And then we say together, the light is one. And in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Well, there's much darkness on the astral plane, but also darkness in the mind, which the light of intuition eventually will dispel. The light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. The sacred word, three times. Oh. Oh. Express the formula in the words given. And as we say these words of the formula, the group members will visualize the great searchlight that we now turn on, that we have created, turning its light upon the astral plane. Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the outer world, subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. So our beam, our group beam, is focused on the astral plane, confronting the swirling dark clouds of glamour. And our work is beginning. But now we empower that beam through the invocation of the spiritual will, which reaches us from the monad through the atmic plane, through the jewel in the lotus, through the will synthesis petal of the egoic lotus, and through the sacrifice petals. And there are five and not just three. One sacrifice petal for each of the lower tiers also. So the spiritual will descends, and our beam, we imagine this, is empowered by the will to perform that which spiritually must be done. A very powerful beam enhanced by the spiritual will. Now we're going to use the words of power. And we recognize or realize that it's the glamour of egotism we're working with. But perhaps soon the glamour of materialism. All these glamours feed one another, of course. And now we say together, the power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of egotism. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. It's an issue of centralization versus decentralization. The lower ego is centralized in the midst of the field of consciousness. That cannot be allowed. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. And in the 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose, we will be visualizing our beam of light, our beam of empowered light, penetrating into the glamour, producing its weakening and its dissipation. 5 minutes. So we banish the swirling dark energies which create these swellings on the astral plane, these exaggerations and these minimizations, and all is the sun of right proportion shines. DK's told us, you know, that there are different psychopathologies, but if we combine the first and the fifth ray in the wrong way, we will make an individual so hard as to be untouchable. So that's a very negative outcome of continued egotism. And we work at devitalizing that, preventing its appearance, preventing that exaggerative and minimizing energy or force until true proportion exists. And so now we've had our beam extended, destructive beam, but we withdraw it as an act of will onto the mental plane. We turn off the beam of triple light as one. And we sound the Om, all of us, three times, as if acknowledging the work which has been done by the triple light. The triple light has won. As our work continues, we will work towards deflating the egotism which prevents true cooperation under Libra and the true sense of proportion, prevents divine understanding. Just look on page 333 of Esoteric Astrology, you'll see those qualities in Libra, which we must preserve by deflating the wrong use of the Leonian energy. Okay, friends, well, excuse me, tomorrow morning, we'll continue with our triangles work. It'll be work in esoteric astrology, where he's dedicated about 100 pages to discuss triangles in a very full and comprehensive sense. You don't have to be an esoteric astrologer to appreciate how it works. But pretty soon, for all of us, we're going to be able to triangulate our perceptual universe and see all of the soul connections. The souls are called triangles. So in the chat box is the link there for the webinar. And remember that in the evening we'll be doing the Soul of Nations. That's 5 p.m. GMT, not 5 a.m. That's for triangles. And the next day, Sunday, we'll do Attracting Money for Hierarchical Purposes, 5 p.m. Please do join us if you have the time and want to work meditatively on these important matters. So farewell for the moment. I want to thank you all for being here and for hanging in there. And hopefully as we work together, we will deepen our understanding and increase our effectiveness in this work. So bye for now. And see you, well, this morning here. I don't know what it'll be for you, but we'll see you then. Bye-bye.